is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Obamanomics. The percentage of poor Americans who are living in severe poverty has reached a 32-year high, and millions of working Americans are falling closer to the poverty line.
Economic security for American families is Obama's slogan. But what's the program, and will it bridge the gap between the nation's haves and have-nots? There are 16 million Americans in dire poverty.
Yep, it's the economy, and with us is Robert Pullen, co-director of the Political Economy Research Institute and professor of economics at the University of Massachusetts, Amherst, and Mei-Jun Louie, director of the Closing the Racial Gap Initiative at the Insight Center for Community and Economic Development. Let's get to the nitty-gritty, the economy. Why don't we let either one of you take it? What exactly is the issue in terms of certainly what Obama's stance seems to be on the economy?
Robert, do you want to start?
Sure, I'll start. Well, I think we could take both a long-term and a short-term perspective on this. The long-term perspective is that basically for a generation, the working class in the United States has been shafted, if I have to say it in one sentence. The average wage, you had very interesting data about poverty, which is very important to talk about, and we should. But just to start out with, the average working person today is making about 10% less than the average working person did when Richard Nixon got elected to president in 1972. Even though the productivity of the average person is nearly double what it was. So the average wage is 10% lower. The average productivity is double. So that means the money is going up to profits. So that's the long-term perspective. That was not fixed under the last Democratic presidency, Bill Clinton. So the focus has to start there. It's on decent jobs and building an economic structure around that is the long-term issue. Now, the short-term issue, gas prices and the issue of the short-term recession, the housing market collapse, the financial market collapse, these are quite severe problems. So there is a solution in the short and long term, and that is that you have to have a progressive egalitarian government to take steps to focus on promoting decent jobs, fighting poverty, which those two things go together, stabilizing financial markets through regulation, which also goes together, building alternative energy sources that will fight global warming and also put downward pressure on oil prices. So there's a fairly coherent set of things that we can do. Now, whether the Democrats are going to do them or not, in my opinion, is a matter of struggle and fighting for justice.
Well, let me jump in as well. I think that the situation we're in right now is that the American dream is evaporating for really the majority of people, not just for the poor, but for the middle class as well. And when I say the American dream, I mean that people don't want to just run in place. They want to get ahead. They want to feel like their children are going to be better off than they are. And I ask this question sometimes when I do workshops, are your children going to be better off? And I find that with almost everybody, probably for the first time since World War II, people say, no, my children are going to have it harder. The economy is not going to work so well for them. Why has this evaporation of the dream happened? A lot of it is the result of the free market ideology and leaving everything to the free market, allegedly, that has happened over the last 30-some years under both Republicans and Democrats. And I think a problem that we have with Obama is he's still promoting the free market. On his website, he says that, I believe that America's free market has been the engine of America's great progress. It created a prosperity that is the envy of the world, unquote. Well, it has also created the greatest inequality that we've seen since the Gilded Age. So I think that for Obama and the Democrats, they need to name the fact that the invisible hand of the market has not really worked to the benefit of all, but it has been a very active invisible hand giving to one small group and slapping the rest of them aside of the head. The invisible hand is actually the hand of government, which has enabled all of that to happen. So I think that, again, that this needs to be laid bare so that people can see how policies have operated to create the evaporation of that dream.
Robert, I'd like to continue on that point with regard to Obama's economic policy, not only with regard to the policy as it's enunciated by the website and other policy pronouncements, but whether Obama is really framing the issue for the American public.
There was an interesting cover story in the New York Times Sunday magazine about Obamanomics. And the essential point was they framed it initially with respect to the struggle between, quote, two Bobs. One was Bob Rubin, Robert Rubin, who was Treasury Secretary under Clinton, most of his administration, was certainly Clinton's major advisor. And he was a major player, Wall Street player. And the other one was Bob Reich, Robert Reich, who was Labor Secretary in Clinton's first term and is more of a progressive person. So that same struggle that prevailed during the Clinton years is happening again under Obama, which of course should make sense because the same forces are allied within the Democratic Party now as they were then. So it's very important that progressives push Obama and his advisors to the left because it's an open question. I don't really think the fact that Obama was a community organizer for a few years, that's positive, but I don't think it really is going to mean too much in terms of how policy is pursued. The real issue is whether the progressive forces, people that are fighting for working people, the poor, the middle class, are going to prevail over the interests of Wall Street and big capital. And that is really the fight. And Robert Rubin is the representative of Wall Street and big capital, and he had Clinton's ear, and there's a very good chance he's going to have Obama's ear, even though what has happened in the last 5 or 6 years, of course, when financial markets were deregulated, people like Bob Rubin benefited tremendously personally. The country is in the tank. We know what's happened to the housing market. We know the financial markets are on their back, and we need to re-regulate these markets and channel credit into productive activities that will create jobs, fight for a clean environment, fight global warming, and fight poverty. That is the struggle that needs to go on. Those are the central questions, and it's anybody's guess. I don't think that we know which way Obama would go. I do think he's certainly more open to a progressive agenda than any Republican would be, but I also don't think that he's any less vulnerable to the pressures from Wall Street and the center right, we can say, that are in fact dominant within the Democratic Party.
Right. I guess I would say, though, that if you contrast him with McCain, obviously you see a huge difference in that McCain would really just continue the policies that we've already seen, extending Bush's tax cuts, giving more tax breaks to corporations and wealthy individuals, and so on. So I think under Obama's plans, he really would try to reduce some of the inequality. For example, the top 1/100th of a percentage of the top wealthy people would lose $200,000 under Obama's proposals, while they would gain $700,000 a year under McCain's proposals. So there certainly is a difference. However, I think that in terms of how he presents all of this to the American public, we have a period ahead of us that is going to be quite painful, and we hope he makes it, you know, more painful to the rich who can stand the pain. They will hardly feel it. On the other hand, it's going to be a rough ride in the next few years anyway, and he's not really preparing people for that or giving them a framework to think about what needs to happen to change this around. And as I said, it's not unleashing the free market even more. It is government coming in to take a much stronger hand. So we have to really fight this idea of the smaller government, the better. I just contrast this to Roosevelt when he came into office in 1933. Of course, the situation was even worse, although I think we're going downhill. But in his very first day of office, he called a special session of Congress, and he immediately reformed the banking system. He created the Conservation Corps by executive order, the TVA. I mean, he put out huge investments of government money to provide jobs for those who didn't have them.
Well, I think those are good points. I think that I don't think that we can depend on Obama, and I'm not really casting aspersion on Obama per se. And of course, I agree that there's a huge difference between what Obama would do and what McCain or anybody other Republican would do. I think it's really more in the hands of progressive forces and progressive forces pushing Obama. What we need to do now is focus on what a progressive economic agenda is and present that and fight for it. And Obama's not going to take all of it, but he'll take a high percentage of it if he's forced to. And the backbone of the Democratic Party is the labor movement and progressive movements. Then you have, you know, the other force is essentially Wall Street. The one difference between the Democrats and the Republicans have the big oil companies on their side, and they have the, you know, the social conservatives. So that's their struggle within that party. But the Democrats are, you know, inevitably going to have to fight this thing out. The main thing is for the progressives to have a coherent vision and to fight for it.
Well, I totally agree with that, Robert, and I'm not critical of Obama per se in the sense that he is who he is, and often progressives invest people like Obama with all of their greatest hopes, and then they're disappointed when that doesn't happen. I think we have to be completely realistic as to who Obama is, and he's been pretty clear that he is not a progressive in spite of his community organizing, as you point out. He is more in the line of the centrists like the Clintons were as well. Certainly past policies that hurt working people, such as NAFTA, such as TANF, and so on. But I think that understanding who he is will be important to what we're able to accomplish, and to know that we do have to continue to push, as you say, and to put out the issues that we think are important. And one I think that has not been mentioned is definitely closing the racial divide. African Americans, for example, still only make 58 cents in income to the white dollar, and the wealth gap is even greater. It's only 15%. 15 cents of wealth to the white family's wealth. And when you think about the American dream that I started out with, your dream is not to work yourself into the ground, but you do need some ownership, you need some assets in order to get ahead. And I'm hoping that we can push Obama to take that on and to look at alleviation of poverty not only as an income issue, but as an asset issue.
Again, these are great ideas, and I support it. To give some historical perspective, I'm glad you mentioned the race issue. Even if Obama, in terms of his economic policies, is more or less a replay of Clinton, and I hope he'll be far better than that, let's keep in mind that he is African-American, and it would be a huge historic achievement, in my view, for him to be elected. And so, again, I'm not just disparaging Obama.
Right, I agree.
And Obama is a politician, and so we just have to recognize that. He is not going to be the champion of a progressive movement. He can be pushed in that direction. In the past few years, I've been doing some work in South Africa, and that reminds me a lot. I mean, a true hero, progressive hero, certainly Nelson Mandela was a true hero of our era. Even still, when he got out of prison and became president, he was forced by not such dissimilar forces in his country and globally to embrace a neoliberal center-right agenda. And the impact of that is still being felt severely in South Africa, with poverty being so high and unemployment being 40%. And only now, as we're making a transition to a third presidency in South Africa, is there serious discussion about some alternative economic policies for jobs and fighting poverty aggressively. So this is a big struggle, and the struggle that we'll face in the U.S. is really before us. What gives some advantage to the progressive forces is the total discrediting of the Robert Rubin agenda. The Robert Rubin agenda was, okay, we will do some minor things around the edges for equality and poverty alleviation and jobs, but the real agenda is whatever Wall Street wants, Wall Street gets. And that's what they've been getting for 20 years, and this is where we are now. We've had the housing market collapse. We've had a financial market collapse. The news every day is that people expect this to continue for years. There's news about the banking sector being very weak. We need to move towards an economy that is regulated and channels our energies, money, activities into productive activities that creates jobs and promotes equality. That's the progressive agenda.
Right, and we may not all need to work as hard. I'm thinking, like, where did the 40-hour a week go? and when we're looking for more jobs for people, certainly we can start to make work, as you were pointing out originally, about productivity going up and wages going down. We certainly should be able to remedy that. It's such a logical and rational argument that all of that should not go simply into the pockets of the CEOs.
Robert, I know that you're preparing research for a significant article that will be previewed in September, but I just want to end perhaps on a little bit more of, well, an optimistic note. One, I know you don't think that this is analogous to the 1930s collapse, number one, and number two, maybe you can just give us a little bit more of a sense of the green market program
right.
that we might be able to initiate that would really take a look at both the economy, the environment, and perhaps put us to work and stabilize
uh-huh. okay.
the market?
Well, thanks for these very good questions. Why don't I think that this is like a 1930s collapse? Because if economists have learned one thing since the 1930s, we haven't learned very much. In fact, we've unlearned a lot of things. But the one thing that we still know is the thing that we're doing now, which is bailout operations. In the 1930s, they didn't know how to do these kinds of government bailouts like we're now seeing for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and that we saw before with Bear Stearns and Wall Street. So these things are quite effective. What it means is that the disease is still there. The problem gets deeper, but what we are able to do is dampen the worst effects of it. And that's essentially what's going on with the bailout operation. Now, in terms of a positive program, thank you for referring to this work that I'm doing that's going to come out on thinking about the green investments and jobs. This is something that everybody says they're for. It's something that we can implement right now. I mean, what I've sketched out in this research is a program of roughly the size of the amount of money going to Iraq right now, which is $150 billion. You can do very, very simple things. It doesn't have to be fancy technologies. You can do building retrofits is probably the most efficient way to promote a green economy right now. You can put money into that. You can put money into mass transit, solar power, wind power, biomass, and so forth, and you would advance the green economy, which is what everyone says we need, the non-fossil fuel-based economy. And at that level of spending, $150 billion, you'd create about 3 million jobs. So we could create 3 million jobs now by either shifting the money out of Iraq and into green investments, or even if that money is stuck in Iraq, we can still come up with the $150 billion in part from the private financial markets. You create incentives for the private financial markets to, instead of continuing on these excess speculative excesses, to finance green investments. So that's basically the idea.
Well, I'm going to project that we're going to have a lot of time to continue this discussion. And I know both of you in your own rights have some very substantive proposals that I hope become part of the agenda that progressives adopt in order to push the electorate forward in terms of the income disparity that is growing and growing. Thanks to Robert Pullen and Mei-Jun Louie for their astute critique, both of the economic platform of Barack Obama and the Democrats, but most significantly in what is to be done and who is to do the pushing.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. Randy Newman's Mr. President. We're going to hook up now with comedian actress Lily Tomlin, who appeared as her character, Ernestine, the irascible phone operator, representative from the now classic TV comic variety show Laughin', at a California rally in support of health care for all. Lily adopts Ernestine's role to play a representative of an HMO, and if you think she was funny then, wait till you hear her now.
Thank you all. Oh, it's so great to see you all. Thank you. Thank you for having so much energy, so much spirit to come out here, stand here in the sun. It's inspiring. It's moving. It's motivating. I have been so incredibly worried. I'm just proud to be here at this rally for One Care, knowing that somewhere in this country, the Bush administration is secretly planning none care. And I have to tell you, I do worry. I worry so much because the way you give me a different kind of inspiration, because I usually worry no matter how cynical you become, it's never enough to keep up. But being here today gives me another kind of impetus. I was so worried somehow that maybe Dick Cheney might show up somewhere. But luckily, I read in TV Guide, he's on a TV show this weekend, America's Least Wanted. Okay, now, I've prepared an Ernestine routine for you. Some of you know Ernestine, some of you don't. But Ernestine used to be a telephone operator at AT&T. And, of course, with the divestiture, she couldn't stand that loss of power. So she's moved over to another industry. Care Control Insurance Corp. Claims Department. Ernestine Tomlin speaking. State your record number and be quick about it. Your name is not important. Here we do everything by the numbers. Ka-ching, ka-ching. Oops, and your number is up. Care Control, what's your gripe du jour? No, not covered. Being blind is a pre-existing condition. You should have read the fine print. Ernestine Tomlin claims... No, that your plan does not cover that. That's an exclusion. No, an exclusion, as in exclude, meaning leave out, cut out, shut out, expel, remove from consideration, make impossible, not going to happen. Forget it. Don't make me laugh. Hello, Earth to you. Exclusion. It's your nickel. Speak up. You were shot in a subway? Next time, eat at Quiznos. Ernestine claims... Oh, you haven't yet seen a doctor? Well, good, sir. Let's get a specimen of your problem. Remove all your clothing and fold it neatly on a chair. Yes, all of it. Oh, no, don't be that way. After all, your secretary is a professional person. Good, sir. Now take your instrument, sit on it, turn your head and cough. Oh, I love this job. Ernestine claims no can do. No, sir. No, we consider that an elective procedure, meaning we elect not to pay for it. It's not our fault you've had two heart attacks. You should have stopped at one. Tell me, does heart disease run in the family? So, the apple doesn't collapse far from the tree. Next life, learn from Dick Cheney. Don't have a heart. Ernestine, angel of mercy, not. Calm down, I can't understand a word you're screaming. I know your hand is broken. You told me that yesterday. Yes, I have your request. You're begging for surgery form in triplicate. Request denied. I can't read this third copy. Next time, press harder. Your family doctor is not in our coverage area. No. Our nearest preferred provider is, let's see, if you hop on a plane right now, you might get there before the blood clot travels to your brain. No, the only way I can help is if you go to an acupuncturist. No, we don't cover acupuncture. I was just needling you. You must think HMO stands for help me out. We don't care if you're fed up, just if you're paid up. Don't you get it? It takes big bucks to run an insurance company. Medical care is the least of it. You wouldn't believe the paperwork. All this waste doesn't come cheap. Remember, here at Care Control, your health is our business, not our concern. Thank you all. Thank you.
And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.